This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This is Meant to be Eaten on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host for today, Melissa Fuster. This episode is part of a special series in collaboration with Gastronomica, the Journal for Food Studies. Our new issue, volume 21.2, features articles on topics that include commensality and creative collaboration, the politics of food systems, and race and representation. In this series, members from the Gastronomica editorial collective talk with authors about the work featured in the journal. Our guest this week is Michael Bruckert, author of Chicken Politics, Agri-Food Capitalism, Anxious Bodies, and the New Meanings of Chicken Meat in India, where he explored meat industrialization in South India. Michael is a researcher at CIRAD, the French Research Organization for Agriculture and International Development. His work addresses agri-food systems and food consumption patterns. He received a PhD in human geography at the Sorbonne University in Paris and was a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Toronto Culinaria Research Center. Michael, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So I wanted to start by asking you if you can briefly share with our listeners about your work. What do you do, for example, at CIRAD? What is your position? And how does it relate to your doctoral and postdoctoral work?
Yes, sure, with pleasure. So so I'm a researcher at CIRAD. I'm a geographer, as you mentioned it. And I'm now based in Hanoi, in Vietnam, for the past 2 years and a half. And I'm working, like broadly speaking, on food systems, urban food systems, and sustainable food systems. So I'm interested in the way food arrangements and market arrangements, physical and social infrastructure, shape the relations within the food system and the way they can contribute to food systems that are more equitable, more inclusive, more just, but also more sustainable and delivering food security and food safety and so on. So so at all, I'm a geographer. So what I'm doing here at CIRAD is more like social and I would say economic geography. My PhD was more in, so to say, cultural geography. In my PhD, I was more interested in food consumption patterns and in a way on the, in a cultural dimension, because as I've been working on India for my PhD, I had to focus a lot on issues around religion, Hinduism, castes, and of course, and as I was working on meat, you know, meat is a very polysemic foodstuff, so so yeah, I was very close from anthropology at that time. Now I'm, I can define myself maybe more as a social geographer.
Interesting. And so yeah, so you, I wanted us to then start talking more about your article. That is very interesting what you already started mentioning, your work in India. So your article, Chicken Politics, traces the commodification of poultry from, you take us from farm markets, butcher shops to eateries, home kitchens, and consumer plates in Tamil Nadu. So can you tell us a little bit more about how this project came about? What took you to India to follow chickens from farm to the table?
Yes, sure. So actually I've been working in India before I started doing some research. So because at first I won't spend too much time explaining that, but I first did a master in some other discipline, like in management, and I was interested in cooperation and so on, international development. And so I had the opportunity, I mean, I was always attracted by India, I mean, always, since I was a teenager, maybe. And so I got the opportunity to work in India, and then after some time I resumed my study and I decided to do some research on food. And for me, it was a good opportunity to go back to India to study and to research about food in India. And the topic of meat didn't come immediately on my mind. And it's when trying to figure out what could be an interesting research topic in geography in India, and discussing also with some anthropologists who were working on meat in China, I suddenly realized that meat was a very interesting issue, and there was a lot of things to say about meat. And I quickly discovered, speaking with researchers, geographers, anthropologists, that this issue of meat has not been really tackled, especially in South India. Now, in between, a lot of people starting publishing books on meat in India, but at that time when I started, like in 2011, in French there was almost nothing, but even in English there were a few, like some special issues from some journals and so on, some single articles, but not like a study that tried to address the issue of meat from production to consumption through distribution, and which was particularly surprising because meat has this very contentious position in India. Because at the same time, I mean, India is sometimes, like in the West, is depicted as a vegetarian country. So some people, some researchers even to whom I was telling that I wanted to work on meat in India, they told me, but there is no meat in India. Come on, people are vegetarian there, which is absolutely wrong, actually. And but at the same time, also, you have all this discourse about food transition or diet transition, nutrition transition, that pretends that with urbanization, economic growth, development, blah, 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 people would so get richer, and mechanically they would indulge into like heavy meat consumption, which was also not what I noticed when I was living in India. So I thought that there was maybe something interesting, a kind of dialectics between this so-called modernization or westernization of diets, and on the other side, the vegetarianism and the politicization of vegetarianism, especially by high caste and by the Hindu nationalists. So it's really this dialectic that I tried to explore in my research, in my doctoral research. So the PhD in itself was about meat at large, which is maybe a bit too large, but I focused so on beef, on what we call mutton, and on chicken. And I published about it in French first, because I wrote it in French. But then I really thought that chicken was embodying this tension between capitalism, agri-food capitalism, and the cultural embeddedness of food in India. And so I decided to publish this article in English, especially on chicken. Yeah.
No, and definitely, as you mentioned, it's true that we tend to think about India as vegetarian, or the research that we hear or read about, as you do mention in your piece, tends to focus more on beef, around the religious aspect of the cow and how that relates to beef eating. So yes, really interesting that special focus that you bring in terms of chicken, that I think chicken can be seen as a more quotidian or I don't know, more familiar meat, but then you make the case about the complications of chicken in a place like India.
Yeah, definitely. As you told, there have been some papers on the issue of beef, like the so-called hogdi cow, which doesn't really exist, but anyway, it's a powerful narrative. And also mutton is like mutton, which is the meat of goat or of sheep. And it's the so-called traditional meat in India. I mean, we have pastoralist people raising sheep or raising goats, especially in the north, in Rajasthan. And so this is quite a common picture. And definitely, for a while, so what people call mutton was really the most prestigious meat. I mean, if you had to offer meat at some ceremonies, festivals, it had to be mutton. And chicken was really something only for Christians or tribal people, and chicken really suffered from very bad reputation, like being dirty, having dirty eating habits. But suddenly, like especially due to this capitalist investments and the intensification and industrialization of the chicken sector, chicken very quickly became the most eaten meat in India. And also the cheapest one, which is interesting. So there is really some economic dimension that underpinned this surge in chicken consumption.
Yeah, very interesting. And Can you tell us more? Can you bring us back to your experience, the actual following the chicken from the farm to the table? How did you conduct the research? How long were you in the field? Any experiences that you want to share with us that didn't make it to the article?
Yeah, sure. So the field work lasted a bit more than 1 year, and but in this field work I had to follow also the other animals that I mentioned, like buffalo and cattle and mutton and sheep and goat and so on. But chicken is an important part in my research, in my doctoral research. So especially also because it was quite easy, through the local contacts I had in the population, to visit chicken farms, to meet growers, and also he had good contacts with butchers and wholesalers in Chennai, which is the main city in Tamil Nadu. So I didn't really like follow the animals like from upstream to downstream, but I started with the markets because mm-hmm. I was living in Chennai, the urban center. And so I first went to see the butchers, and thanks to the butchers, I understood better how they were connected upstream with the wholesalers. And through the wholesalers, I got some contacts in some farms, and I also had some friends who were living in rural areas, and we had some good contacts in the chicken farm sector. And also I got the chance to meet the CEO of a middle-scale chicken integrator in Tamil Nadu. It's not the biggest one, but he could tell me the full narrative of this chicken sectors that is booming up presently. So I didn't really like follow in space, but it was a kind of multi-sited ethnography, mm-hmm. and with some jumps from urban to rural and back to urban, and from consumer to distributor, and then to farmers, and back to consumer again. So trying to link up all this and to understand a bit the logics behind, and especially I was very interested in the connections, in the dialectics between production and consumption. So mm-hmm. if you follow like in a too linear way, you maybe miss the influence that consumption has on production, and conversely the influence that production had on consumption. So I had to go like back and forth between the different sectors. Yeah.
And did you know, when we do field work, sometimes there's issues with access or people not wanting to talk about certain topics. Did you find yourself having easy access to not only the smaller producers, but as you got to the more industrial production? Or were people fairly open to talking?
It's a good and important question. Interestingly, it was really easier to have access to people selling chicken meat and producing chicken than to beef butchers or people slaughtering cattle and slaughtering buffalo. So I had some troubles visiting the slaughterhouse in Chennai where people slaughter sheep and goat and cattle. Mm-hmm. I've been sometimes rejected from some beef butcher shops. But with chicken, I had very few issues because, chicken has this image of being something modern, and, the CEO of this company I was interviewing was very proud to explain me his investments and his plans for the future. And so chicken has this very good image, but it's as if chicken is not an animal. That's really what I try to illustrate in my article. Mm-hmm. There is no big social issues around rearing chicken for meat consumption or even slaughtering chicken. Hindu nationalists try to campaign very sometimes violently and actively against beef consumption and against cattle slaughter. But, almost nothing is said against against chicken slaughtering or chicken consumption, and some animal welfare activists do blame farmers for not handling chicken properly, but it's quite very rare, and it's not in the public debate in India. But one important point also is the fact that I tried to approach like the big companies, the the only company I managed to meet, it was through a friend, so that I had easy access to them. But like the real big ones, they also keep this kind of secrecy, and it's very hard to approach them, and I didn't manage to get an interview with them. And I think this is something very, very common in food studies or in agri-food studies. We have a lot of knowledge about the way it works in the informal sector, in small-scale agriculture, in small-scale processing. But when we try to approach like the big groups, big corporations, then doors are often closed because of, I don't know, industrial secrecy, or people get feared that we might blame them for something, and we are activists and so on. So, yeah, easy to approach chicken, but not that easy to approach corporations.
Yeah, makes sense. And definitely, as you mentioned, sometimes we do have to use our personal networks to get into some of these spaces. And one question I'm wondering, as you were doing the interviews or talking with people about chicken, how was their reaction? Did anybody ask you, why do you want to talk to me about chicken versus the other meats that you were exploring in your research?
Yes, sure. So when I was talking with eaters or consumers, I was asking questions about their meat consumption at large. So any kind of meat they could eat. And interestingly, chicken was never really a contentious issue. I mean, when people were telling me they were vegetarians, okay, done. So I was asking questions about vegetarianism, why they were vegetarians and so on, but so I didn't have to ask anything about meat consumption. But when people were not vegetarians, I knew that starting with chicken, I mean, when I asked them to list the different kind of meats they were eating, they often started with chicken because, yeah, chicken, it's something common and it's widely accepted. So beef eaters, for instance, would not say at first, well, I'm a big beef eater. I mean, some people even try to conceal it. And I had like this interesting moments in research when an old lady starting telling me we eat beef, and then her husband or son, I don't remember, were like, no, don't tell that. You should not know that. And then I had to say, but don't worry, in the place where I come from, in the West, we don't mind. And I had to say that beef is very valued in our country. So in order to show that I was not judging them, but they even felt that maybe even the Western interviewer could judge them on their beef consumption. But on chicken consumption, people never felt they could be judged. And they really understood that, they were always comfortable speaking with it. But I must add that most of the time I was working with a research assistant who was also helping me in translation, because I learned Tamil language, but so I could do like some basic interviews, gathering like basic information in Tamil. But when I really wanted to get into the details, to understand like the significations that people were undergoing meat with, and really to understand, to have a refined understanding of the practices, I had to go through an interpreter. And he was very helpful in also like securing people, making them comfortable. Because, yeah, still in India, it's not always easy to speak about meat production and meat consumption. And it was the same for the butchers. I mean, some were quite reluctant to see me coming up and asking questions. And some were believing that I was working for big industry, trying to understand the market, to enter into the market. And because, you know, I have kind of clear complexion. Some believe that I was like coming from North India. I was a high caste man from North India. Maybe he was trying to get them into troubles and so on. So, yeah, I yet to do my best to make them be comfortable speaking about it. And also my research assistant was very, very helpful in that.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. I think those are interesting backdrop stories that unfortunately we don't always get to share it in our papers, right? But very, very important issues about access and how people relate to our work in the field. Thank you. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back in just a moment to talk a little bit more, and now switching more about to your findings from all of these interviews that you did. We'll be back in just a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we're back. This is Meant to be Eaten with Melissa Fuster talking with Mikael Bruquet about his article Chicken Politics, available in the current issue of Gastronomica, the Journal for Food Studies. Before the break, we spoke about your experience conducting the research in Tamil Nadu. Now let's talk about the takeaways from this work. What do you hope readers, including fellow chicken consumers, learn from your piece? What are some lessons learned from your experience also that could be applied to other places?
I would say that maybe what I tried to highlight in this article is that there is nothing really natural with high meat consumption, especially with high chicken consumption. And the fact that this all the signification that are attached to chicken are partly shaped also by the industry and by the way this chicken farming has evolved recently in India, but for decades in the West. So, and so I think what happens in India is a bit also what happened in the West a few decades ago. This intensification and industrialization of chicken production really tried to, I mean, it tended to deny or to conceal the animality in chicken meat. In India, it's the case, and I think in the West, it's also a bit the case that people tend not to think about chicken as real animals. And when you maybe people eat chicken meat because it's deprived of animal attributes. I mean, it's quite bland, it's whitish, and so not very fat, and I mean, it became very ubiquitous meat and kind of de-animalized meat. But this has been done mostly through agri-food capitalism. I mean, it was difficult to imagine before selective breeding, before confined animal feeding operation, to get a meat with these specific characteristics. And it's really to these investments, the research in meat production, in chicken production, and all these industrial strategies that made meat this kind of generic foodstuff. I mean, that made, sorry, chicken this kind of generic foodstuff that we, that many people now have in the fridges, that we find in supermarkets, and that's really disconnected people from the animal they're eating.
Yeah, and I also thought that it was interesting in the first half that you were sharing how people didn't see any, that they didn't feel uncomfortable talking about chicken. And you know, when you think about it, like chicken production in places like the United States or in Western countries, that we do see a lot of animal rights activism around how chicken is being produced. But you mentioned that you didn't see that much of that in India, or do you see that could be increasing? How do you see that those concerns that we have in the West about animal welfare playing out in regards to chicken?
Well, I think in the West it went so far, this intensification and industrialization, that there is this kind of backlash. I mean, it's normal. I mean, it's not only that people get suddenly shocked by the fact that we raise animals and that we kill them and eat their meat. It's also because the full system went so far in trying to deny these animals their animality and their vitality and so on, that of course it's became very shocking to see the way chicken are raised, especially for egg laying. I mean, I think egg laying is even a more questionable issue, but also for flesh production. And so in India, it's something that happens. Of course, I don't say that nobody in India ever complained about the way chicken are raised. But for most of the people I interviewed, it was not really an issue, this welfare in the farms, especially because chickens are not seen as animals as cattle can be seen as animals. Mm-hmm. But it's starting mostly from international activist campaign or international animal welfare organization such as PETA. PETA is doing, is very present in India. Mm. So it's, I would say it's a kind of Western way of criticizing these regimes of production. And PETA is actually very strong in India within the upper class, like the kind of bourgeoisie, and also within people belonging to higher castes, and higher castes were vegetarians. And so this kind of modern vegetarianism that combines Western animal welfare values with some Hindu ethos, it's something that is quite salient. But it's not a mainstream, or it's not a massive protest so far.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think that, you know, your piece allows us to have these conversations as exactly what you said, like about how just what you told us, that influence that relates to class, about how they view animal welfare, how that is different between classes, the influence of international organizations. Very, very interesting. And another thing that struck me from your article is also what I perceive as a tension in how consumers regard the safety of industrial chicken. If I understood it correctly, you mentioned that some felt more comfortable eating chickens that were more industrially produced because they had a better sense of what the chicken were eating, versus others that were feeling wary about not knowing where the chicken comes from. So this struck me because it resonates with other experiences. Like, for example, I did some field work in El Salvador where I also saw this tension between the perceived safety of industrial food, but then also being wary about not knowing where your food is coming from. As you're seeing this tension, how do you see this moving forward, or how do you see this tension in India?
So I would say that there are like different conventions of safety. I use the term convention on purpose, like referring to this full convention theory. So one is the industrial convention, whereby food safety is guaranteed by some processes, expert assessment, certifications, and so on. And I mean, obviously, this speaks to a kind of cosmopolitan, upper class section of the society more and more. And it's meant to increase, but to what extent, it's difficult to say. And competing against this industrial convention, there is what we can call the domestic convention, where trust is embedded in mutual relationship and in the habit of going always to the same producer, to the same seller, and in knowing exactly what the persons are doing. And in a way, it's an opposition between trusting what you see. So you see the butcher killing the animal in front of you, and so you know the animal has just been culled before you bought it, and you see that the place was quite clean and so on. versus trust in what you believe or in trust in what is said. So through labels, certifications, mm-hmm. and expert assessment. But it's not really contradictory. I mean, for some people, people navigate a bit between these different kinds of conventions. But truly, yeah, the industrial convention speaks much more to a cosmopolitan and rich section of the society. But so far, the domestic convention is resisting, and that's also what I try to argue in the paper. The fact that still, like, more maybe than 90 or 95% of chicken is sold so warm, which means, like, it doesn't go through any cold chain, and it's slaughtered usually in front of the buyer. And for people, it's a guarantee of safety because they know that the animal was alive just a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. But it's also a guarantee of kind of animality in the meat. The flesh is not cold, there is still a bit of blood in it, and they can see the feathers from the animal, and they are sure that that the blood has been properly drained out of the carcass. So it's really mm-hmm. a way to temper this animality. I mean, people have a sense that they control this animality. They can assess the fact that it's the good distance, you know, between two animal and not two animal. So and it's also something that we notice here where I am now in Vietnam. A lot of people still prefer buying meat fresh or warm, as we call it. So this is also a kind of everyday resistance against what agri-food industrial capitalism is trying to do with meat production and meat supply.
And do you think that resistance will persevere, or what is your sense about the potential evolution of the industry?
The industry is trying hard to achieve its goals. So the first goal for them was really to consolidate and to integrate the upstream activities, like providing animal feed, and then doing the selective breeding and raising the animals. But now, step by step, they are trying to also integrate the downstream activities. Mm-hmm. So by processing the chicken and selling it packed and chilled or frozen and so on. And of course, I mean, in a way, the power is in their hand. I mean, they know also how to reach out to people and how to communicate around their products. And so, of course, they're strong enough to shift a bit, I would say, the regimes of knowledge and of values that that underpin the consumption of chicken. But to what extent can they really reshuffle all that? To what extent can they really convince consumers that it's safer, it's better to eat chicken meat that is salt packed and chilled? Difficult to say. I mean, difficult to make predictions, but it's interesting and surprising to see the resistance and the way alternative systems of chicken and meat production are being either developed or are surviving in this context. Yes.
Yeah, you know, it will be interesting to continue following the chicken, right? To see who, I don't want to say who wins, but if the industry is actually to able to gain ground. Also, you know, I think it's also important to contextualize this within, I feel that this increasingly global movement towards thinking about animal product consumption in relation to nutrition or planet health, that I'm guessing would also influence a lot of these dynamics in India, right?
Yes, sure. Definitely, the full global meat complex is facing planet boundaries and criticism regarding nutrition issues and so on. In India, so far, meat consumption and protein consumption itself is very low. So it's quite difficult to argue that people had to reduce their meat mm-hmm. consumption for environmental reasons or even for nutrition reasons. On the contrary, it is true that eating more meat for a lot of Indian people could be a way to improve their intake of macronutrients and micronutrients. But definitely the environmental issue is big and it's coming up ahead and the price of feed anyway might go higher and that might endanger the food industry. So even through through economic impacts, this full issue of environmental sustainability will impact or will have echoes on the local Indian meat supply chain.
Yeah, definitely. And thank you for contextualizing the issue of malnutrition as well, that even though we speak a lot about reducing meat consumption in some places, animal protein can bring benefits to the population. So it makes it even more complicated, all of these dynamics that we're seeing.
Yeah, definitely. I try to articulate that in a book chapter that I published a few years ago. I called it The Indian Meat Dilemma. Mm-hmm. Trying to show that it's difficult to find a trade-off between, let's say, environmental soundness, nutrition, and social justice. Because the ones who ask in India to eat more meat are usually the ones coming from deprived population, coming from lower caste that have been discriminated for long, and also the ones who suffer from nutritional imbalances. So it is quite difficult to prevent them from eating more meat due to some ecological reasons. So it's more at a global scale that we should think about this. And of course, reducing meat consumption in northern countries, in Europe, in North America, wherever, should be a first step before we tackle this issue of over meat consumption in India, because there are a lot of social justice issues behind that.
Definitely, and I wanted to ask you now to move from the chicken to your current work now. Just to wrap up, if you can give us an update about what you're working on now and how have you been building on this very interesting topic?
So I'm still trying to figure out how I can bridge the gap between this research on cultural aspects of meat in India with more economic and social aspects of food systems at large here in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to do is to keep an interest in these relationships between the materiality of food and the meanings that people endow to foodstuffs. So, for instance, here I'm working on wholesale markets and street vendors. So on a very social and economic perspective to try to understand how these infrastructures or how these facilities or arrangements can be a way to secure easy access to cheap food and to diversified food, and also can be a way to secure an equitable access to jobs and to income, especially for marginal sellers and marginal holders. But still, I try to understand these infrastructures not only like as physical structures or physical markets, but also I try to understand the way this infrastructure tends to reshape the materiality of food and tend to reshape also the significances and the meanings that are associated with food. So trying to bring some more symbolic and discursive perspective behind those physical infrastructures. So what I try to argue is that an infrastructure or a market arrangement is not only about physical flows of matter of people, but it's also about shaping specific understandings that revolve around foodstuffs.
Very interesting work, and I hope we get to read about it soon and seeing any parallels or sorry, linkages that you might see building from your work in India now looking into these issues in Vietnam.
Yes, hopefully I'll manage to come down to my table and to write and publish some articles about this new fieldwork soon. Yeah.
Good, good, and I'll be looking forward to reading that. Thank you. So I do want to thank you, Mikhail, for joining us, and I want to invite readers to read the full article and also see the images from your fieldwork in Gastronomica, the Journal for Food Studies, volume 21.2, currently available in our site, gastronomica.org. Thank you, Mikhail, and thank you for listening.